Hey, welcome to episode 6 of Learning the Ropes, a pro wrestling podcast. My name is Scott.
And I'm Brian.
And this week we're talking about Chris Benoit. And I know a lot of people who know about Chris Benoit are excited to hear us talk about it. Some people were emailing us saying, hey, this is going to be a good one.
Yes. Well, and Scott's been just like biting at the bit for it.
I haven't told him anything. Yeah. I just want to say.
Every time I talk to him, he's like, oh, man, I'm so excited.
when we record this.
I'm like, why?
Yeah. So this is, for those who don't know, if you're listening for the first time, I had Brian, who is a brand new wrestling fan. He'd only seen a couple matches.
Yep.
And I had him pick a wrestler, and he picked Macho Man Randy Savage. And I gave him 7 of the best Macho Man matches. He picked one of those opponents. And who did we do? Ultimate Warrior was second?
Yeah, Ultimate Warrior was second.
And then we're going through episode by episode where I give them 7 of the best matches, and then he picks one of the opponents of that wrestler.
I think we did like Undertaker, right?
Yeah.
After that, and then we did Shawn Michaels.
Bret Hart.
Shawn
Michaels, Bret. So. Now we're at Chris Benoit.
So
the matches I had him watch were back when Chris Benoit was Wild Pegasus in Japan. It was Wild Pegasus versus the Great Suzuki from the Super J Cup, 1994. Chris Benoit versus Al Snow in ECW from ECW Double Tables. Wild Pegasus versus Black Tiger from New Japan's Best of the Super Junior 3. And then I showed him a clip of the Radicals debuting in the WWE and from 2000.
Yep, they were wearing real silky shirts.
Oh, they sure are. It is 2000. Yeah, Y2K scared us a lot, and we made some bad decisions.
We did not know how to dress when we were scared.
Then we had Chris Benoit versus Jericho in a ladder match from the Royal Rumble, 2001.
Good.
Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho tag teaming against Triple H and Stone Cold from an episode of Raw.
Another great match.
Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle versus Edge and Rey Mysterio from No Mercy 2002, and Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit at the Royal Rumble 2003. And it's pretty interesting. A lot of the opponents would show up on in multiple matches. Mm-hmm. So Jericho had 2 matches.
Yeah.
Kurt Angle had a couple matches. And so
I think these were 2 of Jericho's best matches that I've seen, that I've been shown.
Because he's been showing up on stuff too.
He has.
This is not the first time.
He's been in a few classics, you know, that you've shown me. What's
great about Jericho is that when we get to a Jericho-only episode where we focus on him, plenty more to choose from.
Really?
Yeah.
He's just got this huge repertoire of stuff.
Yeah, you can choose
any of
them. This ladder match. I had seen it, but not since 2001.
Okay.
The tag team match versus Triple H and Stone Cold, I had never seen.
That was a good one.
That was amazing.
Stone Cold brought out his gold plated knee braces.
Yeah, it was awesome. So let's talk Chris Benoit.
Okay. I want to know more about who he is, where he came from, because I only watched the matches.
Yeah, I really didn't give him any context.
First off, is he dead?
We'll save that to the end.
Are you shitting me?
I don't want to spoil anything.
Like, is that going to be like our own little segment, like at the very end? Is he dead?
Well, is he a pro wrestler who's not on TV now? Well, then there's a good chance he's dead.
Oh, shit. Everyone's dead.
We talked about Owen Hart last week.
That one's sad.
Yeah, Owen Hart is sad. Yeah, who else? Ultimate Warrior is dead. Macho Man is dead. Shawn Michaels somehow still alive.
And Miss Elizabeth.
Yes, absolutely.
Miss Elizabeth is dead.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels is alive.
Yeah,
Undertaker is barely alive.
He's dead and died and raised
from
the dead.
He's the dead man.
Yeah, he's the dead man. You can't kill the dead man.
Yeah, he's already dead.
So give me your thoughts on Chris Benoit from watching these matches. What was the idea that you got of him just from these matches?
His technical proficiency was amazing. Like, that was one thing that I really enjoyed about him is he... Like, so Bret Hart seemed to be like super accurate, or I don't
precise.
Know.
Precise.
Precise, yeah.
Yeah, that's advanced.
Really precise, whereas Benoit was a little bit more flashy.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he was incredible with like the submission holds and the...
I love that you pointed that out. He was trained by Bret Hart's dad.
Oh, was
in
he?
The Hart dungeon that
oh,
we talked about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes absolute sense because
that's awesome.
You can tell. And, he was great with like, he had some really cool, I don't know, like it seems like a wrestling match can sometimes drag on in the beginning and have a hard time warming up a crowd.
Sure.
And one thing that I've learned is the chaining. you know, like
chain wrestling.
Yeah, yep. Chain wrestling. And he was amazing at that, especially like coming up with some flashy stuff to do, you know, with his opponent to start out with right out of the gate.
Definitely.
It was actually, because chaining can be really boring. Chaining can be a lot like, you know, putting him in a cross face and just sitting there for five minutes.
Yeah, 10-minute like. Headlocks. I don't know who that's for. It's not for me. But
I don't know. And the thing is, like, and usually those seem to be communication moves, but...
How long do you need to communicate?
Yeah. Well, that's an argument move.
All right, well, we're gonna stand up, and then I'm going to push you off the ropes. And when you come off the ropes, you're going to bounce back with a lot of force. So when you come down, I'm going to get knocked down. And you're gonna go off the southeast ropes, and then we're going to, like, yeah, it's no good.
Exactly. No, but, like, he didn't seem to do a lot of that communication stuff. Seemed like a lot of the stuff was pretty well worked out beforehand, you know, didn't need to really be debated.
He did have a faster pace than Bret Hart, a similar pace.
Yeah,
but you're right, a little flashier, a little faster.
Yeah.
And he was trained in the Hart Dungeon, and he grew up idolizing Dynamite Kid, who we talked about with Bret Hart last week. So who Bret Hart also idolized and worked with, and they have a very similar background. In fact, a lot of Benoit's moves, like the diving headbutt or the snap suplexes.
That's a crazy move.
It is a crazy move. That's those were Dynamite Kid moves.
Oh, were they?
And so Dynamite Kid inspired, you know, like a whole branch of wrestling.
He also had the sharpshooter as well. Like, Benoit used the sharpshooter all the time.
Yep, he did.
From what I saw.
And the match that got us to Benoit was last week's episode. It was Bret Hart, and I picked Bret Hart versus Chris Benoit in the Owen Hart tribute match from WCW Nitro. And so
and it was your reaction, you know, about Chris Benoit when I talked about him that made me want to learn more about him.
Yeah.
Because apparently there's a story.
And he was one of my favorites growing up.
Oh, really?
Absolute favorite.
Why would you say he was your favorite?
He had a match, and I didn't know how to pick one of these matches. He had such a wide, varied career.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a series of 7 matches with a wrestler named Booker T, who was my best friend Ryan. It was his favorite wrestler.
Okay.
And I loved Benoit, and they just put on these like amazing 7 matches over like a month and a half. And that was when it really locked down for me that Benoit was great. And that's when I went back and watched some of his stuff in Japan, some of his stuff in ECW.
He was also in Mexico as well, right?
He was everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, he really, and at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these guys are like, this is my WCW chapter. Then I jumped to WWE, or I went ECW, WWF. Benoit was, well, I did 6 weeks in WCW, then I went back to Japan, and then I came back to WWF for 3 matches.
So
it seems
kind of like how things are nowadays.
Yeah, you can really jump around a lot more.
Yeah, it seems like things are a bit more...
We always had the indies in the United States, you know, and even in the territories that we talk about a lot, but Japan, it still is, it's not dominated by English or American wrestlers at all, but it is sort of like a second home. If you're not getting into WWE and you can wrestle a certain Japanese style, which Benoit absolutely could, you sort of could have a second home in Japan.
So what is that Japanese style that you're referencing?
It's less showier. It's less cartoony. It's more serious.
You know,
it's more
what?
Brutal.
Yeah.
Stiffer wrestling. Like, they really kick the shit out of each other.
Yeah. Well, and I was kind of noticing that, like, there's a lot less. Well, so what was the match that you gave?
So we had against the Great Suzuki, which was the guy with the mask, and then Black Tiger, the other guy with the mask.
Yeah.
So
those were both Japan matches.
Those were both took place in Japan.
Okay.
Great Suzuki is from Japan, and then Black Tiger is from Mexico.
Yeah, so what I was noticing is that those matches were less showy, a lot less character shown off in those.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they had their masks and those are their character basically, but it seemed to be a little more serious, you know, the Japan audience seemed to be a little bit more serious as well. And
we can sort of talk about both of these matches at the same time. They really stepped up the game. These two matches in particular and a handful of others, they really stepped up the sort of Lucha Libre Japan, like really fast paced. I don't know. I call them the cruiserweight matches, the lightweights.
Yeah.
And so they really progressed that style and sort of brought us into the mid 90s, which was the heyday of lightweight wrestling. Up until I feel like right now we're having a big golden era. WWE obviously is doing 205 Live, which is great. But the only way they could do that is if the indies were producing a ridiculous amount of talented, you know, high flyers.
Well, and with Lucha Underground as well.
Like, yes, absolutely.
And freaking almost every match in Lucha Underground is a classic. I swear. Like,
yeah.
It's almost desensitizing in a way. You
know,
like,
what I mean? Oh, a triple flip into the crowd.
I know, right? Like, okay, and it's cool. Like, you should just be like wowed, but it's just like, yeah, well, show me something that I didn't see last match or the match before. It's just absolutely. Like all of them are so great.
And Benoit, from the beginning, we talked about Bret Hart being Cowboy Bret Hart.
And, Cowboy Bret
you know,
Hart.
They didn't quite know what to do with him.
I hate cowboys, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah. And so what they ended up doing for Benoit is they gave him the mask. He was, you know, Pegasus Kid, and he really got over. He was winning titles, and then they decided, you're going to take it up a notch. We're going to get rid of the mask,
yep.
And you're going to
show off your missing tooth.
Yes, absolutely.
It's going to be your thing.
Which I believe was knocked out by a dog. I know some people are going to be wondering that. Like, he wrestled
by
all these crazy matches, and from what I read, didn't happen in the ring.
Wow.
It's like completely unrelated. Goes,
and he never got it, like, replaced or anything like
oh,
that.
Oh, no,
nothing
it's great.
Replaced.
I mean,
it's a great look. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, that's Chris Benoit. He doesn't have a damn tooth.
Yeah. So he won the Super Juniors tournament twice.
Super Juniors.
He won the Super J Cup. Like, he
Super J
bounced around all over the world, and then I don't know. He just kept getting better and better and better. And it was an era where WWE was not really highlighting these smaller guys yet.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about Daniel Bryan a lot. We even talk about Bret Hart, who
is
a smaller guy.
I know nothing about Daniel Bryan.
Like, I can't wait to get to a Daniel
Bryan
episode.
Yeah, that'll be a great episode.
I know we will. The long story short with Daniel Bryan is he was an indie god. He was on the indies, Ring of Honor, Japan.
Ring of Honor.
Yeah, Ring of Honor was like his big thing, and Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. And so he was trained by Shawn Michaels and just one of the best. I can't wait to talk with him or talk to him. Well, shit, I'd love to talk with him. But we can talk about him too.
No, I just want to talk about him. I want to talk to him. Nah.
So let's get into ECW, because this, I believe, was your first ECW match.
Yeah, I'd never watched an ECW match. I know that ECW was something that you really liked.
God damn, I loved ECW. That was buying bootleg tapes off of websites. This was pre-eBay. This was just a guy with an Angel Fire or GeoCities website listing out a bunch of tapes that he had dubbed and bootlegged.
And how old were you when you were buying these things?
I mean, I was probably 12, 13.
How are you getting money for this?
Any money I could scrounge up, birthday money, anything, I was like buying. You know, I'd go online and they'd say, hey, people used to make their own compilations.
Okay.
And so it'd be like, I have all these tapes from Mexico. I'm going to make, you know, the best of Eddie Guerrero, or I'm going to make the best of, you know, Lucha Libre or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they, I would buy those tapes from them.
Oh,
and
that's awesome.
When I started seeing the old Benoit matches, because you couldn't stream them on the internet. You couldn't do any, you know, you had to be hardcore fans to get these.
Which luckily I know someone who's a little hardcore.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Show me the ropes.
Yeah, I loved ECW. And this is a great way to segue into ECW because...
What did you like about ECW? What was it that drew you to that?
It seemed really gritty. The first way I really saw it for the first time was in Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazines.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated,
yes.
PWI. I would just...
Nice.
I would read it every issue. And
awesome.
When you couldn't get stuff on the internet, there was no way to see the things you weren't buying on pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just, and ECW didn't have a TV show, a national television show. And so I would see these pictures and the just blood would be pouring out of people's faces and they'd be throwing each other through barbed wire tables. And I was just like, what the hell is this? And WWE was still in the very like cartoony era.
Yeah.
You know, it was guys like Lex Luger and just like steroid addled freaks. And these were like a different type of freaks. ECW was just packed full of like just psychopaths. And I was just drawn to it as any teenager, you know, probably would be.
Except for me.
My blood. Yeah.
I was real scared.
Yeah. Well, that's where the other side of ECW comes in, is the other way they made their bread and butter was they had these hardcore matches, but then also brought in the best cruiserweight talent from all over the world. So they had guys like Rey Mysterio, Psychosis, Eddie Guerrero, okay. Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Saturn, you know, the entire Radicals group that they debuted in WWE together. That is, they were all in ECW.
Oh, was Rey Mysterio part of the Radicals?
No, he wasn't.
Oh, but Eddie Guerrero was, wasn't he?
It was going to be, yeah, Eddie Guerrero was. Shane McMahon, Shane Douglas. Shane Douglas was going to be one. But it was, yeah, it was Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, Perry Saturn, and Chris Benoit. Those were the Radicals.
Okay.
And so, and they just had these incredible, really fast-paced matches. The same way I had never seen any violence, like the violent half of ECW was, I had never seen any lightweight action like that before.
Yeah, where it's just like super flashy, really entertaining, high flying.
If you didn't care about production value, and actually the lack of production value I think was a selling point, ECW was the most exciting wrestling that was out there. So it was owned by Paul Heyman, who you know.
Oh, no way.
That is his baby. That is where Paul Heyman really got his foot in the wrestling business.
So, is that why he's with WWE now? Is because they own ECW, or how did that whole relationship work?
He's such a wheeler dealer. Yeah, they did. They bought out the company, and a lot of wrestlers would say that Heyman screwed him over. You know, that he owed him a lot of money, and the business was failing, and he told him week after week he wasn't going to sell to WWE. He was going to figure it out. Money was coming in, and then he jumped ship over to WWE. The company, all the tapes, everything went with them.
He's a
wheeler dealer for sure.
He's definitely one of them Game of Thrones guys.
Yeah, he looks out for Paul Heyman while telling you, you know, that he's looking out for you.
No, I really love you. I love you so much.
I love Paul Heyman. Yeah, stab you. Yeah, yeah. It's just, who will red wedding your wedding? He'll just...
You're not invited to my wedding.
No.
None of my weddings are you invited to ever.
Now, I think you probably heard them refer to Chris Benoit as the Crippler.
The Crippler. The Canadian Crippler. So he had that on his ass, and he also had a Pegasus on his ass.
He sure did.
And I dug the Pegasus, actually. The Pegasus branding.
It was a cool gimmick.
I thought it was the Great Pegasus, but it was actually the Great Suzuki.
Right.
And in my mind, watching these matches, like, that actually was, that's a cool, you know, little moniker to go between face and heel is great and wild, you know. I was wrong, so it was just in my own mind that I was figuring that out. But anyway.
This guy's great.
But the Crippler.
So that is a Paul Heyman creation, that gimmick, but it sort of springs from real life.
You know what? He's definitely, that fits him. I like the Pegasus branding, you know, a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's great, but he wasn't, really, at least from what I saw, too terribly charismatic in terms of, on the mic or anything.
No,
like
definitely
that.
Not. He and was so, a Bret Hart-ish
and that seems like a very,
wrestler
like,
man.
Yeah, it's like... So, Crippler, and I think also the Wolverine, you know.
And then he also broke Sabu's neck.
What? Sabu's neck.
Sabu's neck.
Who's Sabu?
So Sabu, you can actually look up on that poster. I have a ECW poster hanging up. On the very, very right, the guy with the heads. I don't know what you call that thing. But that is Sabu. He was a maniac, too. And he was more on the violent side of ECW, but also mixed in a lot of the lightweight stuff. I was going to send you this clip, but we talk about every week.
Gosh.
You're like, I can't even handle Tombstone Piledrivers. I thought it was too early to send you this clip. Maybe I'll send it to you now.
Maybe I'll try it.
It was just a miscommunication in the ring. And we talked about how Bret Hart was very careful in the ring and never injured anybody.
Yeah, which is cool.
You know, Benoit was not dangerous. He was a little flashier, but this was just sort of a freak accident.
All of his own moves, all of the moves that were dangerous seemed to be more dangerous to him than anybody else.
Oh yeah, like the diving headbutt.
Like the diving headbutt.
Some foreshadowing. We'll get there. Sabu. He shoots Sabu off the ropes and he goes to do a back body drop, goes to flip him over. He goes to pancake him. He goes to lift him up, and then Sabu's supposed to fall down on his face, in stomach. Sabu, mid-air, decides, I'm going to land on my back instead. He doesn't have enough time to rotate, and he just comes down, spikes himself right on the top of the head, breaks his neck. He rolls out of the ring. He just starts screaming, my neck is broken. My neck is broken. Something's wrong. They end the match. Sabu goes off. His neck really is broken. He isn't paralyzed, but he, you know, he's out for a while and has to get that fixed. But then Benoit is crying. He goes to the back and just breaks down. And he gets a call from Heyman a week later, and he's like, how's Sabu doing? And Haman's just going, "You're going to be the crippler. You're going to be the crippler." Shit. And he's like,
"He is a red wedding. Fine.
I don't care. Like, how is Zabu?" And Haman was just so sold on, you know, he's like, "Can he walk? Is he alive? Like, I broke someone's neck. Tell me how he is." And Haman's just like, "You're the crippler. We're going to
be great. We're going to make so much money."
I mean, and then that's just the way Haman was. Oh, so Zabu was fine. He had a great long career after that. And I think he still does wrestling dates. And, but yeah, that's just a little look into Paul Heyman. And Benoit, you know, he's
well. That's nice to hear about Benoit, that he actually has some empathy.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Now comes WWF. He comes in with the Radicals. I think they were WWE by this point, but it was 2000.
Yeah.
Benoit, Malenko, Guerrero, and Saturn.
Yep.
They show up, and they are a group of wrestlers who WCW treated poorly, mm-hmm. in their opinions. And
you said WCW?
Yes, sorry. WCW treated them poorly. Okay. And they knew that people were wanting to jump ship to WWE. And
WCW
wanted to keep them.
Was this at the end of WCW?
Close. Not the very, very end, but this was sort of, the writing was on the wall by this point for WCW.
It's like we're doing a real bad job, guys.
Yeah. And so they actually gave Benoit the world title to keep him there.
He
kept going, "You can give me the title.
I'm still leaving.
Yeah. And they were like, "Oh," they didn't buy it. They didn't call his bluff. So he wins the title and then shows up on WWE television, you know, a little bit later. And he's like, "Yeah, fine, I don't care."
Yeah, like, it's like, "No, I did it."
He's like, "Oh, it's a nice resume piece. It's a nice accomplishment, but I don't care about it." And so I'm jumping ship. And so he was out of there.
I don't care about it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I don't care about it. I want to hear your thoughts on Benoit versus Jericho in the ladder match.
That was a great match. This seemed to be the Jericho at his prime, you know. And I guess it was only great because the two of them were just at the top of their game. It was a little out of control, and I loved it.
They had this amazing spot where they do the Lion Tamer, or what do they call it, the Walls of Jericho,
mm-hmm.
on top of the ladder.
Yeah.
And that was one of the best things I've ever seen. It was a huge belly-to-back suplex over the ropes to the outside.
It was a great finish, too, where,
he did the crossface, and he can't tap out because it's a ladder match.
Yeah, and he's tapping. Yeah. And that was great. But I loved that, I think Jericho ended up, trapping him underneath the ladder. And so...
Oh, yeah, and then he tips him out, and Benoit goes to the outside, mm-hmm. and, Jericho wins that.
It was great.
Yeah.
It was a great match. And I was actually wondering to myself, well, why is this so much more entertaining than... And maybe just the Japanese style wrestling isn't my cup of tea, you know. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah,
it was so serious, but this one for some reason actually got my adrenaline pumping a little.
It was
bit.
It was, mm-hmm. you know, and this was, you know, years later, and so this was, you know, from 94 to 2000, mm-hmm. a lot happened. It was only 6 years, but it's a very important time in pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. A lot changed. You headed into the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
These lightweights, you know, it was guys like Benoit and the Radicals and Jericho really pushing things forward. And so you give the best of the best 6 years to develop together.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all wrestled each other a million times and just,
That's super cool.
Yeah,
that's
just and not... then throw a ladder in there.
Yeah.
I mean, a ladder's going to make it exciting.
Exactly. So ladders were also a thing that gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
You know? I'm okay with them now. I like ladder matches quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of find myself rolling my eyes a little bit whenever they hop on the ladder to start climbing up.
Oh, and then everything goes into slow motion.
Yeah, it's like slow motion.
It's just like, it's only 5 steps up, buddy. Just run up this. And it's always 20 minutes of just slowly climbing.
But they sell that shit so well, though. And Jericho is one of the best, you know, in terms of theatricality.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. So, this was a great match. And the guys had really great chemistry. I think that's the other thing that enjoy is when they have good chemistry.
I think that is true of all the matches on this list, but especially these matches that were coming up as we go on. Guys like Benoit and Kurt Angle versus Edge and Rey Mysterio.
Gosh,
Benoit
that was
and
a
Kurt
great
Angle.
Match.
Benoit and Jericho versus Triple H and Stone Cold.
That was probably my favorite match.
It was awesome.
Out of all of them.
Okay, here's a couple things about this match.
Okay.
Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho on a tag team versus Triple H and Stone Cold for the tag team titles. This was, agreed, one of the most entertaining matches that on the whole list. It was just exciting. It was fun. I don't think I'd ever seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
And what I realized when I looked doing research was I could have seen this match live. It took place in San Jose.
Oh,
which
no
is
way.
And you at just, the venue I went to go
damn.
See wrestling. I don't know
you
why
missed
I missed it. I missed it. I don't know. I would love to go back in time and find out what I was doing that weekend.
Now we just have to go to all the matches now so we never have to miss anything.
Yeah, never miss anything. And, you know, and Raw, we're in Salt Lake City now, and Raw is not going to do a taping here.
No,
we
never.
We were stuck with house shows
never will
until
happen.
We fly out to
and
see
we can't
other
even, we
events.
We can't even fill a stadium for it.
It was so...
For a house show.
No, not even close. And so we... A lot of things happened in that arena that I missed. I looked it up, and I also missed the 1998 Royal Rumble where Kane lit Undertaker's casket on fire.
You missed that one,
that
too?
Was an hour away from my house. Like, I was just so... I don't know what I was doing, because I went to see quite a few wrestling shows at that arena, but it was a lot of house shows. I saw one Raw
you're
taping.
You're watching your ECW tapes.
Probably so. I was just like, I was just an angry nerd about it. I was like, oh, who needs WWF? Like,
I'll just take my ECW.
Oh, and so
that's excellent.
The first live event I went to was later in 1998 after the Royal Rumble. I just want to read out the card to give everybody an idea. This won't mean much to you, but I know our listeners... It was Kurgan and Golga from the Oddities versus Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor. Edge and Gangrel versus Skull and 8-Ball. X-Pac versus Al Snow. Al Snow from the Benoit match at Double Tables. And X-Pac from the Click. And, oh, he was the 1-2-3
kid.
Yeah.
Did that thing with China.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he sure
never
did.
Never recovered.
He sure did. Sable and Christian versus Jacqueline and Mark Marrow. That was the first time I saw a boob in real life in person.
Nice.
She did some spot in her... shirt fell off or something.
Oh,
I don't
darn.
Know. And I was like way back up in the nosebleeds, and I called it. I was like, I think I just saw her boob. Like, it was just like a 12-year-old or 13-year-old's just like focused vision was just like, wait a minute, hold on, somebody. I hope somebody's recording this. And
at 12 years old, you have just, pinpoint vision for that kind of thing.
Stone Cold versus Kane, Undertaker, and The Rock in a four-way match. Steve Blackman versus the Blue Blazer. Which we talked about last week was the gimmick that killed Owen Hart.
Yep.
Shit. Yeah, so I saw him wrestle as...
Whenever I hear Owen Hart now, I get really sad.
That is, yeah, that is a common feeling. He was one of the most liked, happiest guys. Val Venus versus Goldust. Goldust, who we saw at the house show we went to. Ken Shamrock versus Mankind, Mick Foley. New Age Outlaws from DX versus D'Lo Brown and Mark Henry. So that's just like, that was the first show I went to. And there's a lot of mid-card garbage on that one, but a lot of good stuff. Like, I saw some of the biggest, best wrestlers of all time. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like, there's a lot on there that I don't know. But
yeah.
It sounds
and
like
we'll get
there are a few. Yeah,
someday we'll
I'm
do
excited
a
for the
Kurgan episode. We won't. story time. Kurgan. I like to do stories. Kurgan was a bad guy for one scene in one of the Sherlock Holmes movies.
Oh, no way.
Just a little trivia.
Nice. Good job, Kurgan. You did
you,
it. it. Like, are you talking like the Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I don't know if you ever saw the scene. The guy's like 7 feet tall, and he's like punching the guy in the chest and does nothing to him.
No.
That guy was a pro wrestler.
Oh, nice.
Also, another little trivia. Kevin Nash, Diesel, who we've talked about in previous episodes, played Super Shredder in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze.
Wait, is that like the one where they were in the costumes, Ninja Turtles?
Yeah, the live action ones.
Nice.
Yeah,
those are the classics.
When he gets really big and crawls out from under the pier that has collapsed on him.
Yeah.
When they needed the big guy, you never see his face, but that's Kevin Nash.
Nice.
Well, trivia.
What was your favorite match out of all of these?
Man, that I think that tag team match we were talking about
with Triple H and Stone Cold.
So many false finishes. I didn't know who was going to win going into it. I'd never seen it before.
That one was out of control because sorry, forgive me for cutting you off. No. But that one was out of control because like the ref couldn't keep any of the shit contained.
No, you know,
like,
not at all.
And that was like the only time I've ever seen like a ref kick a hand or whatever, or you know, he was kind of a little bit of a bulldog, and I dug that ref.
Yeah, he was great.
You know, and it was a great setup of like a bunch of like behind the ref's back moves. You know what
Definitely.
I mean?
Definitely. The ring psychology in this one was like awesome. Was, the storytelling that, you know what? Was perfect.
I think that's what I loved about it, and that's what I really liked about the Jericho match as well. But yeah, this
and
one
it's sometimes what's missing from the stuff in Japan, especially if you're not watching, you know, without any context.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of just like you don't know the significance of the Super J Cup. You know, you don't know the significance of the Great Suzuki and a young guy. You know, wrestling the Great Suzuki, and without the context, it's hard sometimes to grasp why the match was so great.
But this one, like, I didn't need to.
You could show anybody.
You could show anybody, anytime. And it's pretty. It keeps the tension pretty high.
Yeah. And this was on Raw. This could have been, should have been a pay per view.
That was a pay per view.
It could have been a tag team
match.
Main event.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, I mean, what like two great tag teams as well, like. I think we kind of have tag team garbage right now from what I'm seeing.
It's hard. We have a lot. They're trying to get back into the gimmicks. So you've got, you know, the Fashion Police, and you've got the
Fashion Police are hilarious.
Yeah, they're great.
but
you're right. It's the Hardys are back.
Yeah.
And
that's
awesome.
And I think that's the only reason why they're bringing them back is to revive the tag team. Because it's pretty garbage right now.
And these guys, Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho and Triple H and Stone Cold, these are examples of sometimes they will just take two singles wrestlers, pair them together, and that doesn't always work. Yeah. And I think with both of these teams, it really worked.
Great.
It was awesome.
Stone Cold seems to work well with anybody, though. Like he seems to, like, that's...
He's not the most high-flying guy ever.
No, but he's
ever since Owen Hart broke his neck, which we will talk about at some point.
Oh, no.
It's a dangerous sport. Don't try this at home.
So many broken necks.
But again, this next match, Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle versus Edge and Rey Mysterio.
I love
again, these
Kurt
are
Angle.
Two guys, four singles wrestlers grouped into two tag teams.
Yeah.
So I want to hear your thoughts about that match, because it wasn't quite as exciting as the other one.
And I was hoping it would be, because, all right, so here's just, I mean, I've already said it before on the show. I love Rey Mysterio. He's the first wrestler I ever met, like the first WWE wrestler that I ever met in real life. He was charming as can be, really awesome. I have a mask of his. I'm super, like,
I
was sold immediately after I saw that Halloween Havoc match, which I'm sure we'll put on the list for whenever we do a Rey Mysterio episode.
Yeah.
This was a fun match. I dug the whole. It seemed like there was a storyline here with Edge and Kurt Angle.
Yes, definitely.
And so there was Kurt Angle didn't want to wrestle Rey Mysterio to begin with. But you know, Rey Mysterio ends up kind of like kicking his ass at the beginning. It was great. It was a well-paced match. Edge was fun to watch. Chris Benoit, actually, I feel like was like kind of like the sleeper in the match.
I would agree.
Kurt Angle is always fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Chris Benoit, I'd say it was the sleeper, but it was a pretty good match.
Best 619 I've ever seen.
That was a great 619.
He swings through and then just somehow keeps going.
Yeah.
Like he hits him and then just does like a tumble roll halfway across the ring. I rewound it four times. Like I had never seen a 619 like that. Like that's how that move should be executed.
Right.
Oh, it was great.
And sorry, can I just say real quick? I hate that Cesaro does the 619. He's too big.
I know. It's sort of like it's look, a big guy can do it.
It's impressive that he can do it, but only Rey Mysterio.
Yeah,
you know, he's itty bitty.
And he's still wrestling.
And he's
wait till he retires.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. This match was for the first WWF Tag Team Championships, which is confusing because they've had tag team champions forever.
Yeah.
But it was the whole Raw and SmackDown split for the first time, and it was
I'm
gonna the
say
end of this
that
big
whole
tournament.
Like that whole brand thing that they've got going on there.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people dig it. I'm not digging it so much.
Really?
It's confusing and and I don't understand. Like, I feel like it's restricting a lot of potentially awesome matches that, you know, that won't happen because they're on different brands. Like, I would love to see some of the SmackDown guys wrestle some of the Raw guys.
I agree.
Have a feud. Like, those I don't know. And I know that it's a money play. I know that it's
and
also...
And they'll switch it up and, you know...
Well, they just did with the Superstar Shakeup.
Right.
But it's just... I don't know. I just don't like it too terribly much.
For me, the biggest positive of the brand split is that you have smaller guys who wouldn't be in the main event. Mm. You sort of let them shine a little more.
That makes
sense.
So
you have some guys that... There's extra spots at the quote-unquote top of the card because... You know, like Dean Ambrose, I don't know if Dean Ambrose ever would have got a title run if there was only one split. So I think, or if there was only one brand. And so.
And I can see it. I just.
You know, AJ Styles, when they want to give the belt to Brock Lesnar, AJ Styles will not have that belt. And so you're just. But I get what you're saying.
And I suppose I understand. It's not something that I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah. Well, the last match that we watched was Benoit versus Kurt Angle from the Royal Rumble 2003.
This was a great match, too.
Michael Cole says it, or one of the announcers says it, they went through a war. This match was insane to watch. It was not either one of them's flashiest match, and it wasn't either one of them's best match, but it was good. These guys are matched up.
Well, once again, I think it goes to speak to that ring psychology. You know, the two guys just, they knew how to tell the story in the ring.
Yeah.
You know, and Kurt Angle seems like I'm really on his nuts right now, but he knows how to work a crowd. You know, he knows how to work a crowd.
He's one of the best.
Yeah. And, you know, Chris Benoit is just a real professional, you know, and so with the two of those guys, you know, together, it's bound to be something great. And this one really, really was.
And I think Michael Cole said it best. The whole idea of the ending of this match and the match in general was to get Benoit to a point where he could be seen as a world champion. They weren't ready to give him the belt, but Michael Cole says it at the end. Chris Benoit has proven that he can be a champion.
Mm.
He didn't win, but it set him up. And I know everyone's going to, if you haven't listened to past episodes, you're going to say, where the hell is the triple threat, Benoit versus Triple H versus Shawn Michaels? We actually watched that match during the Shawn Michaels episode,
we
didn't talk about it. I think that's Chris Benoit's best match. It's in my top 10 matches
really
of all time.
Yeah.
I didn't put it on this list because we just
watched
it. I'm
going to go back and rewatch that one, too. And everything that we have is in the show notes, too. Everything that we,
you
know, you
can go back and
reference
watch
the show notes and, you know, watch what we're watching. It's great. Yeah. So, before we move on, though, I kind of want to talk to you about, just because you talk about the announcers saying he's definitely proven himself as someone who can do a title run or whatever, you know. So, like, what would you say the importance of the announcers is to adjacent to wrestling, to what's going on in the ring?
It's, first and foremost, to pimp the Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Act excited when crappy C-list celebrities come out. No, they help tell the story. I think they're a really important part of that.
So do they, I'm assuming that they have like a, so here's what's going to happen. Like, here's what we're wanting to do long term. We need to get some foreshadowing commentary.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, in different situations, it can vary. But, you know, sometimes they know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they'll hide things from the announcers if they want to get that genuine reaction.
Oh, cool.
But these guys, every announcer that you've ever heard, you know, for the most part, they are legends in wrestling, and they've been there forever. And Michael Cole started out as a, you know, backstage interviewer, and he has 20 years announcing now. And
I'm a big fan of Jim Ross.
Aren't we all?
I dig his he seems to like. Seems like sometimes the announcers will take a side, right? And like, well, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, he shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it's that little, like, you know, pseudo caring kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're building up the drama. But Jim Ross, is, like, he always seems to be the one to bitch slap him out of that. And
he's
just
Mr.
like,
Business.
Yeah. And then, you know, he just brings it right back to the action in the ring. And for some reason, I actually kind of dig that. Sometimes
I love that.
Sometimes I'm okay with Lawler, you know, going crazy.
Were the best pair. They were so good.
But
JR, I always say this, JR was the third man in the Undertaker Mankind Hell in the Cell. Mm. I mean, he helped to make that match as much as anybody.
That's true.
Because if you had 10 minutes of, you know, Mick Foley laying dead without anybody talking,
yeah,
it
so
just
boring.
Wasn't work. But you needed something from JR to, like, sort and of keep
things
going.
He has this, like, air of concern in his voice no matter what. Like, especially in that match in particular.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's old school values and just,
exactly.
Yeah,
like, JR's really awesome. You really buy on, you know, buy into that. Yeah. And it was cool to have him back for WrestleMania.
Yeah, he's a legend.
Yeah.
So, and then champion, you know, he was, I didn't send you any matches from Benoit's championship reign. You
okay.
know, his best matches, I think, came before. This was sort of towards the end of his career. Benoit lost the title later, and then was, they sort of did a brand split with ECW when they bought ECW.
Okay.
And so he was sort of demoted, and I don't know why. I tried to find out a good concrete answer how he ended up on ECW.
Yeah.
But he was there, and...
well, I'd imagine you'd need to post a few high-caliber guys to maintain the integrity of your brand.
Sure.
You know, across, you know, just especially if you've got a lower tier, you still need people to have a reason to watch it. I think that's why... My theory is why they kept Nakamura and you know NXT for a bit.
Absolutely,
people loved him.
Yeah, he lost the title to Randy Orton, transferred to ECW, and then on June 11th, 2007, he wrestled Elijah Burke, who is no longer employed by WWE, to decide.
You're fired.
I don't know what happened to Burke, but probably something like that.
Something.
And he would the ECW World Championship was vacant, and he wrestled Burke to decide who was going to compete for it. And then this was 2007, and then Benoit missed two house shows in a row, and he called in and he was like, my wife's got food poisoning, my kid's got food poisoning, I can't make it. So Johnny Nitro, who is now Johnny Mundo.
Johnny Mundo.
From Lucha Underground.
He's got some real big abs.
He took Benoit's place and ended up winning the match, and he... And Benoit was scheduled to win the title, but he no-showed the pay-per-view. He no-showed a house show, a second house show, and then the big pay-per-view came.
What happened?
He just no-showed it. And so they start talking to him, or they start talking to some of his friends, like Chavo Guerrero, related to the whole Guerrero family, obviously.
Yeah. He's on Lucha Underground right now.
Yes. And he was in Salt Lake City last night.
I know. I was so bummed. I wanted to go to that show.
Yeah. But he, so Chavo had been getting some text messages just sort of saying, hey, I can't make it in. My wife's sick. My kid's sick. And they were like, all right, well, let us know. Is everything okay? Let us know if you need anything. Fast forward a little bit. Fayetteville, Georgia.
Yep.
They suddenly realize that something is wrong, and the cops are called to the house, and Benoit's neighbor jumps the fence and puts the dogs away and heads into the house, and the neighbor and the cops find Chris Benoit's wife has been murdered, and she has been asphyxiated to death, and a Bible has been placed next to her body, and they continue searching the house, and they find Benoit's 7-year-old son also has been choked to death, and a Bible has been placed next to his body. And then they walk into the weight room, and they find Benoit has hanged himself using the weight cable of the weight machine. And he has murdered his family.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So...
Damn, he just, like, went straight up bonkers.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah. So that was the end of Chris Benoit's.
So you're saying he's dead?
He's dead. Yeah. If you to answer your question from before, Chris Benoit has passed.
And like, what an asshole.
I know.
Like that's the other thing is like I actually really liked him.
He was one of my favorites. I mean, this was just something I couldn't believe, and no one could believe at the time, and all his friends couldn't believe, and it was just he had killed his wife. Nobody knows why. So they assumed there was no conclusion, scuffle or a fight that had escalated.
Damn, but that's intense.
He had a history of domestic abuse. She had stayed with him. She was a wrestler as well. She was a valet. Her name was Woman.
Woman.
Yeah, and I didn't show, purposely didn't send any clips that way. I didn't want to spoil it, but I just was like, he started dating her while she was married to another wrestler named Kevin Sullivan. Mm. And they did an angle where Benoit had an affair with Kevin Sullivan's wife, Woman, and it turned from gimmick to real life. Shit. And they fell in love and they got married and they had a kid. And
he
wrestled Kevin Sullivan multiple times after the affair. And he said, Kevin Sullivan never like took liberties with me in the ring, was never like too violent. He was, professional. But
wow.
And they had been married a long time.
Dang,
and then,
man, that's horrible.
He killed her.
Yeah.
And then stayed in the house with the son and himself for the weekend, still alive, while the wife was dead. And then he killed his son. And then I think it was the next day after that, finally killed himself.
Damn, so
it was a full weekend of him texting his friends like, oh, they have food poisoning. We're going to go to the hospital, going to get a doctor. And the whole time his wife had been dead in the house. And it's just, it's a nightmare scenario.
That's super morbid.
It's insane. And no one knows what his mental state was like at the time. But it was just, tragic end.
That is a horrible end. So how did the company handle that?
They did a 3-hour tribute show to Chris Benoit the next night, which you might be surprised, but they didn't know what had happened. The details weren't out. They knew that the family was dead, but they didn't know if it was a car crash or carbon monoxide. No one thought that this was what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So they did this, really beautiful tribute show to Chris Benoit,
right,
where, wrestlers are talking about him and the whole thing's dedicated to him. And then immediately following the details come out and they find out that he was the one who, murdered them. And they wipe him from the face of the earth.
And they did a great job because I had never heard of him before.
Yeah, they have referenced him on air, I believe, two times since 2007.
Really?
And so they just, if you, depending on what app you use for the to access the WWE network, like on the Roku, they have erased his name. You can't search for his name.
Oh, that's why I couldn't get the Nitro match.
Yeah.
I was trying to find these on the WWE network and I couldn't find them.
Yeah, the matches are on there. You just have to search for his opponents.
Yeah.
Or you have to, they have really done a big effort to erase him from memory. It's very hard. If this were some jobber, whatever. But this guy has main evented WrestleMania.
Right.
This guy's been your top champion.
Yeah.
He is pushed as one of the best of all time. And it was a really tricky situation. How do you handle that? And they decided to handle it just by, there are people who still argue that he should be in the WWE Hall of Fame. They're like,
really?
He was one of the best of all time. Yeah, I have to vote no as well.
A little murdery for my taste.
I see where they're coming from, but they have decided to not ever try to make money off of the Benoit name.
That's a stand-up thing, because they could.
Yeah, and some people think that they've gone too far, and some people feel like, it was probably wrestling's fault that this happened, because what was revealed afterwards was he had, when they did an autopsy, he had the brain of an 86-year-old Alzheimer's patient.
What?
He had had so many concussions.
Jeez.
That his brain had pretty much deteriorated. And a lot of people think that that's probably what happened. Same sort of, you hear this thing about ex-NFL players a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And concussions, they are now treating much more seriously. And they're, and it took that time. But this was, and interestingly enough, after the news came out, every news media blamed steroids.
Oh, really?
Everyone was on TV talking about steroids.
It was the tagline of the era, it seems.
Absolutely. Yeah. They were just, they said, hey, steroids, roid rage, roid rage, roid rage. It had to be steroids. And then later it came out, there was like, I mean, first of all, Benoit had done a shit ton of steroids. Oh, yeah,
he had done steroids.
He had done so many steroids from what I've read. I don't, you know, obviously I don't know what his doctor had given, you know, decided this or not. But apparently he had done so many steroids that he stopped producing testosterone, and he had to keep taking steroids just to maintain.
Just to maintain the testosterone levels.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so he had done plenty of steroids, but once that autopsy came out, it was pretty clear that all those concussions had happened. And
you know, and it's like, in no way do you want to like condone that kind of behavior of like, you know, it's kind of a real bad thing to go murder your family. But like,
for sure.
Same time though, it's like, seems that they're trying to take care of the people or the wrestlers a bit better nowadays.
Yeah. You know? The main thing I wince about now, you always talk about pile drivers and stuff like that.
Yeah, I hate pile
for
drivers.
Me, it's unprotected chair shots to the head.
Yeah.
Which ECW, that was their bread and butter. ECW was just blast everybody in the head with any hard object you can find.
Damn it. What was the... There was a match recently where he really did just take it, like, take chair shots. Actually, I think it was actually the UCW show that you and I went to. One that that Rey Mysterio...
Local wrestling show.
Yeah, the one that Rey Mysterio there showed up at. Chavo Guerrero was at just last night.
Right.
A
lot of unprotected chair shots.
Where that, yeah, like they...
I hated it.
They handcuffed his hands behind him and just went at his head with the chair and...
Knowing what we know now,
yeah,
just I mean, at least just put your hands up and take, you know, help block some of that blow. That's actually
something that resonates with you.
Absolutely,
it seems like
when I see an unprotected chair shot now, I'm just like, you idiots.
Yeah,
like you could do, you know, a 6:30 flip onto a bed of nails for all I give a shit about. But there's just something about unprotected chair shots where I'm just like, you idiots, like. Yeah. You got paid $20 tonight. Like, stop that. Like,
yeah,
but
that's not going to pay for your Instacare.
But I will say, I have taken many unprotected chair shots to the head myself in my wrestling days.
Yeah,
that was all we did. I mean, we weren't even in wrestling matches. If you found a folding chair with me in high school, someone was getting hit with it.
Hey, hit me.
And people who weren't wrestling fans were like, Jesus Christ, kid, what are you doing? Like, you know, we would just kick the shit out of each other all the time. It was like fun. But now you know everything. Now now this has all come out.
Your brain gets
Benoit.
Really swollen.
And WWE has gone as far to ban unprotected chair shots to the head. Even protected chair shots to the head. You can't do it. And so you always just hit them in the back. And I think that's the way it should be. And yeah, so that is the story of Chris Benoit.
Oh, man, what a journey.
We are coming up on the 10-year anniversary of the murder-suicide.
Oh, no.
And just, it's really interesting. One of the best of all time. And everybody, I feel, is really split on how you handle the Benoit legacy. Because, obviously, you don't want to promote him because he did something unforgivable.
I say you use it as to raise awareness, you know?
Absolutely.
Like that seems like a no-brainer to me. Like, don't celebrate his action, but, you know, just rather raise awareness to the thing that caused the issue.
Yeah.
Or that at least contributed to the issue.
Absolutely.
You know?
He had a 22-year career.
Yeah.
He held 22 different titles, and he main evented WrestleMania. He was one of my favorites growing up.
Yeah.
You can't take that away from him.
Right.
But you also, and I think in a classy move, you can choose not to promote.
Yeah, I
not
agree.
To promote him.
Yeah, I can definitely see why.
Yeah. So that is the Chris Benoit story, and now it's time for you to pick your opponent for the next match. You can choose anyone from any of the matches. I will tell you that Black Tiger, this is something that I figured you didn't know going in, under that mask is Eddie Guerrero.
Eddie Guerrero is the Black Tiger.
So we've got the great Suzuki, a legend. I just want to talk about him for just a second.
2 seconds.
Just not to sway you, but I just want to say that he was the founder and owner of Michinoku Pro Wrestling. He was supposed to win the first WWF lightweight tournament, but started bragging to the Japanese media that he wouldn't defend their title and he wouldn't drop it on WWF television. And so they cut ties with him. And he trained Taka Michinoku, who's one of my favorite wrestlers. And so that's great Suzuki, just to give you a little background. Al Snow, Black Tiger, a.k.a. Eddie Guerrero.
Mm-hmm. This seemed to be like Eddie. Well, so, and I know only a little bit about Eddie.
That Halloween Havoc match.
Yeah, he seemed to be
Mysterio.
More of a heel throughout his career.
Definitely.
Black Tiger seems one to be the best. Seems to be one of his face, yeah. Like his face character.
Yeah, he was great. Chris Jericho, Triple H, uh-huh. Stone Cold Steve Austin,
yep.
Edge,
yep.
Rey Mysterio,
yeah.
Kurt Angle. So who are we going to talk about next week?
This one's really hard because
that is a stacked.
That is a real
lineup.
Stack. The thing is like I lament at this point, you know, like having to like pass on somebody
because you're like,
what if we don't get back to them? But like I know that we will, you know. So
these guys are the best, some of the best of all time. We will get to them, but I'm going. For me, I'm like, we never did a Hogan episode. Yeah. We had Macho Man.
You
want to
know what?
Warrior,
that was my decision, though. Like, yeah. I maneuvered us around Hogan because I don't care about him.
Well, I'm certainly glad we've talked about who we've talked about.
But I'm going to go with Rey Mysterio.
Hell yeah.
I'm going to go fanboy on it. I'm even going to wear my mask next episode. This is going to be great. You're not going to see it because it's all audio, but I don't care. Well, you know,
I am so excited.
We should do an Instagram
and show everybody
the new studio and the mask.
So hopefully the audio is sounding better. We've got our new studio pretty much finished,
mm-hmm.
and we've got our mics. We sort of took the first, you know, six, seven episodes to, we want to get the audio sounding as good as we can. Again, give us feedback. Email us at rhymetimetelevision@gmail.com. This mm-hmm. is a Rhymetime Television podcast. Like Rhymetime Television on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know if you think there should be separate social media. Let us know if you want us to tag you on Facebook or email you or text you whenever a new episode comes out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let us know if there are any technical difficulties. We just found out the Shawn Michaels episode was unavailable for a week.
So we're going to be dropping two episodes.
Yeah.
We'll probably drop the Shawn Michaels one as soon as possible.
Yeah, we'll probably get that up today. And today means nothing to when you're to your listening. We probably drop this one. We'll probably drop it in about 2 weeks ago. So we got it. And then Rey Mysterio next week. But again, keep telling us what you want to hear and who we should wrestle. Who we should talk about and just all your favorite Rey Mysterio moments. And till next week. My name's Scott.
I'm Brian.
And this is Learning the Ropes, a pro wrestling podcast. Thanks for listening.